You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Right now, use promo code SPORTS20. That's promo code SPORTS20 to get a free $20 bet at PlayAlberta.ca. Dave, are you back? Do you do an ice caps already in the preseason or no?
Oh, good God, no. No.
Okay.
Oh. Thankfully, that would be atrocious. I don't know about you guys. The preseason feels way too long as it is, especially here in Toronto where it literally feels like Groundhog Day. You could play the tape from this time last year and it would still be relevant. There's not a new player of interest. There really isn't a pending storyline of interest. The whole thing is, once again, the hell with the regular season. We'll see you in April and see how it goes. So it kind of feels mundane here, maybe more so than other parts, but man, the preseason just feels too long going 3 weeks.
I know. This is a lot of people talking about it. Let's talk about a piece of business that came up with Spencer Knight signing an extension. So now he's up for 4 years, counting this year, obviously. $4.5 million for the next 3 years. Bit of a logjam here at the old Florida Panthers with their goaltenders. How do you think this plays out? Is that they're going to rock out with $14.5 million in cap space taken up by the goalies?
Yeah, that's a lot of money to have tied up in your goal right now. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I think when you sign a guy like Spencer Knight, the idea is that at some point within the duration of that contract, he's able to take over the number one job. Now, I think what we've seen in a lot of cases throughout the National League these days is that you need two good goalies. Right, and even if you're paying a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky $10 million, you need a guy that can take legitimately 35 games off the guy, right? And you see one guy playing like 50 and another guy playing 32. Oftentimes, you just don't see too many guys that go north of 60 nowadays. So, I think what they're saying right now in Florida is that they like their goaltending. Between Bobrovsky and Knight, and they feel like they have two good goalies. Now, whether that's Knight who ends up playing more of the games or Bobrovsky, you know, I think they're comfortable with the two goalies that they have. But if it does get to the point, like even at some point this year, that Spencer Knight does become the guy, and he puts himself into an echelon like a Thatcher Demko, or, I think we need to be patient before we start throwing names like Shesterkin or Vasilevsky around, because I think he's got a lot to do to prove himself to be in a group like that. But if you get to the point where you're comfortable with Spencer Knight being more so your number one than your sort of, you know, 1B, if you will, to Bobrovsky's 1A, that's a lot of money in Bobrovsky tied up that's wearing a baseball hat every night as your backup goalie. So, you know, that's sort of what they're going to have to contend with right now. I guess if you like your goaltending and you feel like you've got two good goalies and you say, okay, well, 14 and a half is what we're going to pay starting next season, it is what it is. But that is a lot of money to have tied up, I think, wearing a baseball cap if Spencer Knight becomes the guy that clearly is better than the other option, Bobrovsky.
Dave McCarthy from SiriusXM joins. Dave, what's the injury on Tavares?
He's got an oblique issue that popped up in the game on Saturday against Ottawa. It was a little bit surprising. He practiced on Monday, and we talked to him afterwards, but he seemed really, like, glum and down. And we actually, amongst the media, kind of, not joked, but remarked to ourselves afterwards, like, geez, man, electricity coming out of that scrum, eh? So you wonder if something was bothering him, and then he went for some more testing today, and it turned out to be less minor than was originally thought. It's going to keep him out better part of 3 weeks at minimum right now, which means he won't be available for the start of the season.
So who takes those minutes, or who eats those minutes up?
Well, they've had Alex Kerfoot playing center in camp so far, so he was mentioned as a possibility. Sheldon Keefe mentioned Callie Yarncroke as a possibility as well, a guy that has the ability to play down the middle of the ice. and could shift over to that role. Pontus Holmberg, a sixth round pick at Toronto's, filled in for Tavares on a line with Geno Malgin. Dennis Malgin, not Evgeny Malkin. Let's make a distinction there. And William Nylander today. And Keefe said he's actually quite liked Pontus Holmberg's camp to this point, but those would be pretty big shoes to fill at this point. So I would guess at this point would likely be Alex Kerfoot, Cali Aarnkroke, maybe splitting those duties. And then we'll see how it goes from there. The good news is if Tavares is unavailable for the start of camp, you know, if it's 3 weeks, the Leafs will play three times Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday of the first week. Then they'll have a bit of a break before their next game, which means he maybe might miss three games, potentially at worst. So you should be able to grind through that, because remember, Leafs missed Austin Matthews for the first three games last year. But it's certainly not ideal to have a guy like Tavares banged up, and Jake Muzzin's been on the shelf. He hasn't partaken in a full practice yet with back discomfort, which is concerning. And Timothy Liljegren is out on the back end for 6 weeks after undergoing hernia surgery, and Pierre Engvall hasn't participated, and Rasmus Sandin, for whatever reason, still does not feel the need to sign a contract and show up to play when there's all kinds of opportunity on the back end right now. So they're down a few guys early on in camp, which is not ideal.
Well, you mentioned Jake Muzzin. That's the other one. If there's been one issue in Toronto, it's been the play of their defense, right? They obviously have enough offense. Do they have a good enough defense? If you take out Muzzin and all the other injuries, so two-parter. How serious is Muzzin? And then B, what's up with Sandin? Like, I don't understand this negotiation tactic from them.
No, it makes no sense. Firstly, on Muzzin, Sheldon Keefe continues to suggest that it doesn't appear to be of great concern. Muzzin skated again today for the second consecutive day, and he's expected to be a limited participant in practice on Wednesday. But the chronology of how it played out was a little bit strange, because last Wednesday on media day, Muzzin said, yep, feel great, good to go, got the body ready for another season. And then the Thursday, after standing out on the Wednesday, he just couldn't get on the ice with back discomfort. So I asked Sheldon yesterday, like, what happened there? He went from saying, I feel great, ready to go, to literally can't get on the ice. And he kind of gave me a bit of a vague answer with saying there's some things that had cropped up on his radar toward the end of the summer when he started to ramp it back up, and that type of thing. But nothing related to what he went through last year. But to me, all I interpreted that was, as soon as he started to try hard again toward the end of the summer, his back flared up, right? I mean, anyone can amble around it at 60% and be fine, but as you ramp up and then it crops up, that to me is a real concern for a guy that is of his age and has dealt with some injury issues in the past, even albeit the fact he says it has nothing to do with what he dealt with last year, which were primarily concussion issues. But that sounds ominous to me. So we'll see how that plays out. With Sandin, I don't understand it, boys. I really don't. I mean, this is a guy who at times last year looked and said, man, like, there's not a lot of opportunity for me to play in the top four, to play on the power play, to play legitimate minutes. Well, now there's nothing but opportunity. And I think what he's seen is the Leafs signed Timothy Liljegren to a two-year deal at 1.4 a year. And I wouldn't be surprised if they have the same contract on the table with Timothy Liljegren crossed out and Rasmus Sandin's name filled in and are waiting for him to sign it. And I think Sandin wants more money than that, and I understand it. I think he's a better player than Timothy Liljegren at this point in his career. I think he's probably looking at Adam Boqvist as a comparable, but like the Leafs just don't have that money right now under the cap. So, you know, what you might make now, if you want like 1.8 as opposed to 1.4, will be a mere footnote of what he'll make throughout the duration of his career. If he shows up this year, plays good, gets opportunity early in camp, and hits the ground running. To me, I never like to fault a guy for trying to get every last dollar and cent that he's worth, but I think sometimes you're doing yourself a disservice when there's opportunity screaming you in the face and you opt not to take it. And I asked Sheldon, how much opportunity would there be if a guy like Rasmus was available? And he said, well, there'd be a lot of opportunity, but right now he's not here, so I can't worry about it. In other words, he was saying it would be nice if he decided to show up, because there'd be a lot of opportunity for him to get the chances that he's been wanting for the last year or so.
Joined by Dan McArthur from SiriusXM, talking all things NHL. Slide out just a little bit down the road to Montreal, and it feels like to me there's a ton of talk about Slavkovsky coming out of Montreal, fan-related, media-related, even team-related. Is it almost clear that this is where he'll end up and play this year, is in Montreal?
Well, I think it's fair to say he will likely make the team out of camp. I think he's looked quite good in camp so far, and I think it's reasonable to expect that to be the case from a number one overall pick, and certainly a guy who hasn't looked overmatched per se. And I think he'll get a look at the beginning of the year. But remember, you have that 10-game rule where once you play that 10-game, then the contract kicks in. I would give him that opportunity the first 9 games of the year, but I'd take a long, hard look at that point before he plays the 10th game and reassess at that point. Because, like, I'm not against guys that were drafted this year playing in the NHL. I think it's a rare case, but it's not impossible, right? But I think in order for a guy to get into the NHL after being drafted this past summer, there's continual steps along the way. And keep giving the guy opportunity. If he takes it and exceeds expectations, well, then by all means, if he can play, he can play. But you have to make a significant reassessment, I think, if you're Montreal at the 9-game mark, and look at what you've seen out of the guy. And if he's just okay through 9 games, are there better areas where he could develop? Could he develop better back home in Europe for a year? You have to ask yourself that question if you're Kent Hughes and a company in Montreal. Because if through 9 games he's just okay, and you know he's not really handling the puck and he's not getting a lot of opportunities, and suddenly you're not playing him in a scoring role, does that do him any good? I don't know. So at this point, continue to give him a look if he continues to take it. But I think the proper thing to do would be to make a significant, cool-headed reassessment at that nine game mark. And then if it's not blowing you away, do not hesitate to put him in an area where he can better develop.
Yeah, I look at the same for Shane Wright in Seattle. I don't think there's any player from this year's draft should be playing the NHL this year. But a lot of these guys just haven't played a lot of hockey the last few years due to COVID and everything like that. When you look at 18-year-olds historically in the National Hockey League, guys, there's very few that have success. Very few.
Is it different because he's in Seattle, though? Would you look at the situation differently because he's in Seattle as opposed to Montreal?
No. You're saying because there's more pressure in Montreal? Nah.
Yeah.
Pressure, I don't know. You hide the player in Seattle and no one's talking about him, and his confidence gets shattered either way. I don't think it matters. Like,
yeah.
It might be more external pressure, but internally, it's all about the confidence and development of the player. I don't think it changes.
Yeah, exactly, Gregor. The hell with pressure, with what comes from the outside, from fans. You don't worry about that. It's where's the guy going to develop best? And if you're listening to the pressure of the fan base based on how you're making your assessments of your players, you're not going to be around to make assessments of players all that long. So if the fan base in Montreal, you know, gets a little bit agitated that he may be sent down or sent back to Europe or whatever, but that means a year from now you've got a guy on your hands who's ready to take the league by storm, well, then no one's going to be complaining about it a year from now. But if you mess up the guy's development, like I think, for instance, in Montreal they did with Kotkaniemi, oh, that's a story that'll just never, ever, ever go away. So I don't think pressure really, to me, should have much to do with it.
I would agree. Davey, have yourself a great week. We will talk to you tomorrow when we're down to the final two preseason games for most teams. Should be fun.
Yeah, should be. Thanks, fellas.